at Mal Meninga, our guest. Will be our guest every Thursday for the Throwdown. Here's another one, Mal. 60 Magic Minutes with Mal. That comes from 340.
I like Maddie's Morning Glory. We should come up with something like that.
Yeah, that's not bad, is it? That's not bad. Morning Glory, yeah. Afternoon Delight.
Something like that, yeah. Well, it's a great song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I remember that when I was growing up.
There you go. Oh, mate, that used to appear in every second movie 10 or 15 years ago, that song.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Brad Arthur, Coach Bateman's Bay to their last Group 7 premiership in the 90s, says Sharky. There you go. Just before we get to these callers, a question. Daniel from Prairiewood is a regular contributor to the program. He's a Melbourne Storm fan, but he asks this. Hey, Jimmy in the 13th. Question for Mal. Where are things with the highly anticipated international rugby league calendar? There was talk of a rolling 10-year schedule, which gave clarity of tests, tournaments, and teams in both hemispheres to build momentum on the back of last year's World Cup. Yet, almost 5 months on, we have no idea what the international window looks like in 2023 and beyond. That's concerning. Thoughts on that, Mal?
Well, I'm in the dark too.
Right.
Yeah, so at this stage, I mean, the rolling schedule is never going to happen until after 2025.
Right.
Because obviously COVID interfered with the cycle.
Yep.
So, you know, obviously we should have been 21, but it happened last year, the World Cup. So we've only got a short window between the last World Cup, which is last year, in 2025.
Yep.
So then obviously they'll roll into a 4-year or 8-year schedule. And so that, you know, from that time onwards, you can start planning out a bit, you know, commercially you can get some interest in it as well. Fans can, you know, jump on supporter tours and things like that. So at this stage, we haven't heard much about it all. I believe there's a series of test matches at the end of the year, but it hasn't been ratified yet.
Okay, so that was going to be my next question. Mal Meninga, coach of the Kangaroos, do you know when the next game is for the Kangaroos?
It will be at the end of the year. It's just in what format. So they're working through at the moment. It'd be like a Four Nations type tournament here. I believe they'll try and send one of the teams up to the Northern Hemisphere to go play against England and France at the end of the year as well. So, but that's all sort of in the wash. So they're still working their way through that. What nations is going to do what, and then the same for 24 as well. So I'm kind of hoping as the defending nation, we'll be able to go to the Northern Hemisphere and just help promote wherever it may be up there. You know, so at the moment it's in France. I'm not quite sure whether that's going to go ahead at the moment because, you know, obviously we read things around where the French government might be subtracting their funding. So I think it was about 15 million euros. Yeah, so I'm not quite sure how that going to affect their spending because it's 15 million euro to a government. It's not too much, is it?
No.
It's like a drop in the ocean, isn't it? You know, so, but at this stage, it's all up in the air at the moment.
Okay. It's about a 100th of a submarine or something like that. But anyway.
More or less, yeah.
Let's go to Mark.
Put in the ladder. That's probably what a ladder costs.
It's the ladder on the submarine. That's right. Down in Wollongong wants to ask you about your St. Helens days. G'day, Mark.
G'day, Mal and Jimmy. Oh, just I'd say, Mal, you were the biggest, most successful import from Australia that's ever been. The fact that you won the BBC Sports Personality of the Year is massive. And if a rugby league player did that today, it'd be massive news. So, well done to you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Thank you. I think it was on the back of, you know, we had some really successful Kangaroo tours there as well, as you know, like 82 and 86 and then 90 again. And that's where I got that award in 1990, but off the back of obviously going over there playing for Saints. And that was one of the best experiences of my life, going there, playing in their winter months. It was freezing cold, but it was one of the best experiences of my life. And it sort of, at the time and at the back end of 84, you know, Wynnum thrashed us in the grand final, Brisbane South, and I was the captain of Brisbane South, so my confidence was down. But going back over there and playing that attractive style of footy, rugby league, you know, open style, plenty of ball movement sort of suits me, and come back a more confident person. And it actually led me on to, you know, the story I told initially around Wayne. We had that conversation coming back that, you know, that actually got me more enthused and confident about coming down playing in the playing for Canberra in, you know, the New South Wales competition at the time. So it was a great time in my life, St Helens, and it had a hold of forever special place in my heart.
Good on you, Mark. Thanks for that question. I'm just looking at your record there at St Helens. I think you've had 31 games, 28 tries. But, mate, you lost first round of the Challenge Cup in 84.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. We knocked out in the quarterfinals against by Hull KR.
Yes.
And then Hull beat Hull KR in the semi-final. And then, you know, obviously I think Wigan won it.
Right.
And I went to that Challenge Cup final. Was at Wembley, 100,000 people there. It was unbelievable. And, you know, obviously Sterlo and was playing for Hull, and Brett Kenny and Chicka Ferguson.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chicka, he was my favourite. He was a sensational player. And I watched, and it was the most entertaining game I've ever been to. I mean, I'm not a good watcher if I should have been playing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So a lot of us are like that. But I really enjoyed it. It was 100,000 people, like I said. And Chicka was beat Dane O'Hara in a metre of space in the sideline and scored a try. It was unbelievable, unbelievable. I'm just happy then Chicka made a decision to come down and play for the Raiders as well.
Yeah. I think Brett Kenny was Lance Todd Trophy winner that day.
He was. Yeah, he was exceptionally good. Yeah. But Sterlo was good too. I mean, I was over there after, you know, the World Cup last year, and I went to Hull and they had a bit of a function. And, you know, Peter Sterling's revered in Hull as well, as is, you know, Brett Kenny and Chicka and Wigan. They're just revered because there was a lot of success, you know, through those 80s, wasn't it? You know, with all those players going back and spending a, you know, short stint at those clubs.
Well, I went over there to Halifax for the Tonga v France game before the Rugby League World Cup, and Chris Anderson and Graham Eady are revered because
that's right.
What they did in 87 with the Challenge Cup over there. Better keep going. Scott's on the line, mate. Wants to have a question around concussion. Go for your life, Scotty.
Hey, Mel. How are you, mate?
I'm very good, Scotty. Thanks, mate.
That's the way. But I'm just in regards to sort of a two-pronged question of your thoughts. I was wondering, have they ever thought about bringing the 10-metre rule back a bit in regards to the contact, the constant contact being so hard? And also they could quicken the ruck up that way in regards to cutting the wrestle down to increase the speed of the play to counter the fatigue factor as well. I was wondering what your thoughts on that now.
There was some thought around reducing it to, you know, it's this 10-metre rule at the moment, but actually the referees were going to stand about 8 metres. I think that was sort of in play for a few years. But what happened there, though, Scotty, was that it actually, because teams are closer, it actually enhanced the wrestle a bit.
Right.
So from there, they moved it back to 10. And even this year, they've increased it even more, the distance between the teams, where you've got to have both feet behind the referee, the 10-metre mark. So they're trying to increase the speed of the game so we don't have the wrestle. That's the thinking behind it all. With the concussion side of things, mate, I think they're going back to the old days, I believe, and a lot of clubs now are starting to go back into tackle technique.
Yep.
You know, start to, you know, teach their players, you know, the proper way to tackle, where you put your feet. You know, you tackle through your eyes, you have your eyes up, head up, and, you know, you don't really drop till late and those sort of things. So the tackle technique, I think, will play a very important part in the way, you know, players tackle, and then obviously hopefully that reduces concussion. But I know a lot of clubs are putting a lot of time and effort into that, mate. So, I'm not quite sure. Would have been good many years ago just to have those statistics.
Yeah.
Scott, you know, like, and Jimmy, like, have those statistics around concussion when in the good old days to what it is now, and whether there's some, you know, comparisons we can make there, you know, around it all. Because the good old days was, you know, obviously five-metre rule went out to 10-metre rule, I think it was in the early 90s, and then all of a sudden tackle technique went out because you got the wrestle and you got the catch as they have now where you got to, you know, you try to keep players up, and then that helps slow the play of the ball, you know, by holding them up and then putting them on the ground late. So all those sort of techniques that come in. How do you change all that? It's very difficult, to be honest with you. But I but they've kept the 10 metres, actually lengthened the 10 metres to improve the speed of the play of the ball.
Yeah. Good on you, Scotty. Good question, mate. Harry, we're going to have to get you to wait there, mate. We've got to get ourselves to a break. After the break, we're back with more. You're listening to The Throwdown with Mal Meninga.